The problem is that if we are in a formal organization, a formal hierarchical bureaucracy organization, there is no incentive for doing work design activity. Of course, you're still going to have the smart manager. Of course, you're still going to have the enlightened one. They will understand what needs to be done. And by the way, this is exactly what I was tracing before. Agile experimentation projects. We have had a lot of this stuff. The fact that people have more than one role at the same time, we already had that. Also, again, the work from home type of element has already accelerated part of that. But it's not getting at the level that it's institutional. And you're completely right on citing the manager. Because actually, middle manager are the ones that are going to be more affected and actually can, by taking awareness of what is happening to their job, be the promoter of something a lot stronger in terms of work design.
I'm very excited, Sergio, to have you back on the Work Matters podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Thomas. Very nice to be here again.
So the last time you were here, we talked about the intentional organization. That's been a couple of years ago.
Yes.
I've been following your blog. And more recently, I saw that you've been writing about work design, which is a topic near and dear to my heart. So I'm really excited to have you back on the show to talk about that. Let's maybe start with the elephant in the room, which is AI, right? Everybody's talking about
yes.
it. So let's get that out of the way. So there's a number of predictions about how AI will change the labor market. Some are scary, right? I think 2 billion jobs might disappear. They are more modest estimates. You looked into some of the math, some of the logic behind it.
Yes.
What did you find?
Look, the first thing is that I think we have not really learned a lot from the work from home element that happened during the pandemic, in the sense that in this case as well, predictions are really on the wrong category. What we're doing is we're trying to do job level predictions where we confuse task and roles. What AI is doing is actually creating automation at the task level, but not necessarily eliminating a job entirely. Because let's remember that what a job is an administrative container. We have decided that those tasks actually happen into that job. That's where AI is coming into. And again, I did a little bit the parallel with the work from home, because in the past, the job was also identified with the location and we moved away, and that also created issues in the way remote or hybrid work is actually happening versus all of the prediction and the numbers that circulated. That's why what I think is happening in organization, what I also see also in my concrete example, is not jobs that are disappearing, but work is being redistributed, shifted, is changing for sure. Some people are getting benefit at the personal productivity level, but it's not really deleting jobs. And what we often see in the marketplace, that there are certain organizations that are automating jobs or automating tasks, something that the technology is accelerating, but those automation could have existed also before. So I would not give AI the culprit. I happen to see this AI washing element in the sense that many CEOs and CFOs are trying to get cost-cutting elements under the label, I would say, of a pretty cool and trending topic at the moment, which is AI, but it's not AI the culprit, also because we have not yet understood completely how this is really impacting our jobs.
I mean, AI is having a big impact, but it's a general purpose technology,
yes.
like electricity, like the internet. And those technologies have been transformational, but that transformation often took a lot longer than we expected. I think electrification took like 50, 60, 70 years. Why is that?
I think that all those big transformational technologies have not just added things that we could do differently, but they went into the fabric of how activities were done. Think about how the telegraph first and then the telephone after have actually changed, have actually allowed, for example, entire empires to survive, something that before was not possible that speed. And very often we link it with velocity, with speed of execution, but there has been an element like most of the Industrial Revolution would have not been happening without the support of some of those tools. What I see also with AI is probably something similar. We're thinking we can envision where the direction is going. We definitely think that this is a general purpose technology, and I agree with that statement, but the direction, there is a question mark, because we all know that a lot of the predictions before telephone, before telegraph, before other general purpose technology have went in slightly or sometimes even very away from the original plan. And I think that the question here is also this. Very often the technology starts and then organization, businesses, countries have to catch up. And this is where the big piece that we're missing is the fact that the complementary investment, if a laser focus within an organization that is needed, is not just training and the processes, is not just adoption, which is what a lot of companies and a lot of professionals are writing around. It's really about operating model redesign. It's also about governance, okay? And as we mentioned before, it's the work design as a discipline. I give another example. AI is already structurally redefining some elements of the way our traditional economy has been running, at least in the past 20, 30 years. Think about the impact that many consulting firms are taking into account, the impact that it has on traditional software companies, okay? Because the moment that I have tools that can actually code on their own, why do I need to buy another tool? So there are dynamics in place that are really shaping this, but I think we don't yet fully grasp what is the direction element. I'm old enough to already think about the first internet revolution. Also there, we were thinking it would go into a direction. It went slightly different. At the beginning, nobody was thinking about a Facebook or an Amazon. They came a little bit after. But there are some of what we consider winners at the time. Think about Netscape, about AOL, Yahoo, that today either are not existing or in different shape and form. And I think this is exactly the element that is probably going to happen. And the winning companies of that era, those that have survived, they all have done something different in terms of their organizational design, business model, or strategy, or any other of their design component. And this is the piece that I think we need also to clarify for ourselves at this stage.
So let's do it. Let's jump right in. So you have this excellent Substack. You've been talking about work design. And I think the first post that caught my interest where you said, if you ask who in the organization owns work design, you get a blank stare,
right?
Because HR owns the roles, IT owns the system, operation owns processes, but nobody really owns the entire design.
Yes.
Well, first of all, why is that a problem?
Let me give you an example of how this is happening in practice, and I will use a specific AI example. Let's say marketing. I'll pick one function out of the many that you have in an organization, talk to IT and says, hey, there is this cool AI technology that we should be using. We need to implement AI internally. And IT starts treating this similarly to a software implementation or a system implementation. But very soon they realize, sometimes they realized it earlier when Microsoft knocked at their door and started selling Copilot or similar tools, that the adoption of this technology requires somehow a little bit of a different pace, at least. So they engage also HR. Hey guys, can you actually help us? Now, this is a typical setup that we have seen in the past when ERP softwares have been implemented. You would have somebody designing the requirements, IT going into a black room and kind of implementing, often with consultant, and then HR coming into place and designing the training, which we call change management. The problem is that today, this is not enough. And because you are missing those entire 4 months where, or sometimes even more, where IT would just be secluded and do their own stuff, this is hitting the rubber immediately. So you immediately realize that something is not working in the correct way. Recently, I spoke with another CHRO of a pretty large advertising firm, and he told me one of their jobs that is disappearing internally in the organization is those people that actually do storyboards for new advertising, because that has been replaced completely from AI tools. One of the interesting things is that, but they discovered this as a byproduct of implementing a new technology. It was not planned. They found out now that these people, which have very often some very solid and very important skills, that all of a sudden they were discussing, should we cancel that role? Should we do something else, etc.? And this is where they realized that it's not about rewriting a new job description, which is what your HR typically owns in terms of the process. It's not IT that can do something around that. And it's not even the operation function that can do that. And what you really understand is that nobody owns this integration, okay? Because the problem is that IT is implementing these as tools, so they don't think about the downside effect. The concept of capability does not have an institutional home. HR owns skills, but that's a different thing, okay? Not really capabilities. And we don't have decision authority. We don't have a governance model around that. Imagine the moment that algorithms take decision, who was actually designing the governance around those, okay? Even small level decisions today are becoming problematic. And I think that companies are also starting to face this because in the past, if a software was making a mistake, you could always blame the software provider. If today the tool that you have designed with whatever agent you have is taking the wrong decision for a customer, whose responsibility is that? We have never thought about it and we have not designed accordingly.
That's a huge issue. Who is ultimately accountable? And I find it absolutely fascinating that we would never tolerate a junior employee or even a seasoned employee making a fatal mistake. But with the technology, we seem to be infinitely patient.
Yes.
And give it always another chance. So how did we end up here? Work design, we both agree, seems like such an obvious need. Why hasn't it been owned by anybody?
My curiosity led me to start studying this topic a few years ago. Also during the pandemic, I did a lot of reading research on the history of work. Okay. And you notice that it's a pretty fragmented discipline. What I discovered is the fact that over the history of humankind, there have been at least six different discourses of how work was based. At the beginning, work was simply sustenance. I needed to eat. That's how it all started. Then, the moment that civilization started developing, you actually ended up having two discourses that were starting to alternate. On one side, work was seen as a punishment. Let's think about slavery. On the other side, work has become part of salvation. And these two tensions, salvation and punishment, have been leading quite a lot of different culture and civilization, and even in the Western civilization, at least up until the Middle Ages. During the Middle Age, what you start getting is the first type of organization of work. It started in different civilizations earlier, but there is an element of craftsmanship. What is interesting about this discourse is the first time that actually work start getting organized. Because one of the commonality of these four discourses is that there was an identification between the job and the person. If you think about just from a European perspective, at least probably half of the surnames that we use in Europe are still coming from the job that the family was doing. If we move forward, it's just about 150, probably 200 years that there has been an identification of work with the job. And that has been a creation of the Industrial Revolution. And it has one distinguished element. It's for the first time that you take away the factor of production, and I use a little bit of a socialist type of terminology, from the actual work itself. But that's actually what happened. Because under craftsmanship, as a craftsman, you still own the tools in which you were doing your work. Now, Industrial Revolution has been in many ways engineering-led, and that's where the task concept came from. It's still pure Taylorism, if you think about it. And now, move forward to 2026, we still use that framework to establish work, even if it is just 150 years of humankind versus several thousands years. We have been questioning this for many years. There is, I named it discourse as a personal realization. There is a trend, everything around self-management, but already from some of the research that came immediately after Taylor, there is this idea that work is probably something more. But the interesting thing is that we have been analyzing this at the logical level in terms of governance, in terms of a manager, in terms of leadership, etc., etc., but not on work itself. And if you start reading about work design, and I mean, you have been practicing a lot on this topic, elements like decision making. Decisions simply happen in companies almost by magic. Yes, there are governance model, there are big racy matrix, but they all attach to a task. They don't really question how work it is being done. And that's where we are today. Most of my colleagues in HR never even posed the question of what work is, which is also why more recently I started thinking that in org design, we probably need to actually have a basic grammar of what we're doing. Because when you're thinking of an organizational model that is already applied to how work is done, what is work? What is that we're doing? What are people doing in an organization? It is really obvious we need to do it. Nobody owns it because nobody has been thinking of such an elementary element in the way our organization work.
Work didn't change really that much for a long time. I mean, you would reorganize every 5 years, every 10, mm-hmm. but now it's really become constant. The pace really has picked up, but we're still operating with the same model that we used for these big, very carefully thought out transformations. Only now the half-life has gone down to maybe 6 months, right? We're
Correct.
constantly rebuilding.
Correct.
And I guess with AI, there is no longer really clarity around where we're going to end up. You might end up with like five different scenarios for what could happen in 2 or 3 or 5 years. So it becomes really difficult, I guess, to have this classical design approach that says, well, let's figure out what it should look like 2 years from now and then break it into small pieces and then roll that out. But having said that, what's the answer to that? We need a different approach to work design, so we got to own it, and we got to have a much more agile way of doing things. So how do you actually do that in an organization?
Look, it's a little bit easier to define what it should not be or what it isn't, in the sense that it's definitely not a new C-suite type of role. Kind of a chief transformation officer is not even a center of excellence, is not even a project office, because a design problem does not need an institutional response. Because if you just add a new node to the org chart and you feel you're safe, you're still missing the point, because this is a fully transversal impact. And by the way, you mentioned agile, and we mentioned projects, we mentioned different streams in organization going end to end. And this has been one of the elements that has shown the need to rethinking in terms of work already probably 25, 30 years ago. But now it's becoming urgent. It was important already before, now it is becoming urgent because AI is accelerating this a lot. That's why what I think you need, it's a persistent design authority that should be sitting across HR, not necessarily as a function, but as those skill and capability owning roles and peoples, IT, which is around system and tools, okay, whoever runs processes, because it's also part of that element, and the strategy, whoever owns how you're actually reaching a strategic intent. Now, it's interesting because it feels almost like this job can only be done by a CEO. Yes, if you're trying to find one figure in the organization, but the reality is you need to create a governance model around that. And you need to make sure that you're also adding two elements around this, which is the real mandate to actually do it. It cannot just be names, it cannot just be a scrum of scrum type of element that after a couple of instances gets lost, and a measurement framework. Because this is the other element. We need to make sure that we're finding where the consequences of work redesign are landing. Because we are not used to think in terms of work, we're also not used to think in terms of how you measure work. Let me give you one example of how things can actually start in an organization, not necessarily from a top-down decision, but bottom-up through experiments and use cases. I've been pushing an agenda within the HR team in Campari to really experiment a lot of AI tools. This has led to the fact that there is a strong relationship with IT. We need to talk almost daily. And we're not talking just about what technology to use, but how to govern it and how to implement that. We are now working on really implementing a digital twin for HR. We are currently in the experimentation phase, which is essentially a chatbot, an evolved one, that answers like an HR business partner. It can do basically everything from creating a job description to managing the compensation methodology to assessing and suggesting what talent acquisition route you could actually do, knowing all the policies, reporting on numbers, et cetera, et cetera. The other interesting learning here is that this does not work if you do it in a silo. We have a pretty traditional Ulrich model type organization in HR. This is breaking the silos because it's not COE led, it's not HRBP led. You actually need to collaborate around that. Think about how this is going to impact. Think about who is controlling the content that is actually needed to create that. And start challenging our internal operating model of HR. Because if a manager is going to have directly access to a tool like this and do 80% of the work, the type of question that they are going to give to HR are more around strategic workforce planning. They're more around real strategic stuff than the pure operational part. And this is where our traditional job has been done in the past. And that's where the reinventing and doing work design needs to happen.
You just laid out like a very comprehensive landscape there. I want to pick up on a couple of things because I think it's really interesting. I want to start out with the digital twin. You mentioned it can create job descriptions, very powerful, but
Yes.
it comes down to kind of like what values, what philosophy, what mindset do you embed into that chatbot, right? Because it can be just
Yes.
go to the internet and just create like a list of 5,000 attributes. And we call that a job. Or it
Yes.
could be something that's strategic that says, how do I create a fully motivating job where people actually have end-to-end accountability?
Yes.
How do you solve for that?
You know, it's interesting because Part of the experience of running this experiment is the fact that this large language model that we are using, what they do very well is read what you have. And part of the answer to your question is, what is that we have already documented? They are going to ingest and they're going to do that. What they don't know is the water cooler chats, what is inside the head of the people, what is not institutionalized today. My point is, we don't want to get to the chatbot that is going to do the 100% of the strategy work, because that thinking process still has value from an organization perspective on many multiple angle. But it can really work on creating added value. I mean, each of our organization has a huge database of whatever type of information in written format. Think about all the performance reviews that you have had in your organization, et cetera, et cetera. These are not just abstraction, they don't just give you a good looking job description, which is something that we could have done on the normal internet in the past. But they already start building context. They already start reading the culture of your organization. They already start reading how you align or disalign to the organization. But the one element here is that you don't have to accept that this tool is simply shooting out an answer, which is the interesting conundrum of AI implementation at the moment. You need not the most junior person to actually work on this project, but you need to have senior person that can evaluate what type of answer we have. We actually had already implemented one of these tools at the beginning of this year to support our camperista, so all the employees in their goal setting moment. It was very tuned, it was about goal setting, okay? And we know that the tool itself had a couple of hallucinations. But we invested a lot of work looking in the back, what type of questions were done, et cetera, et cetera. And the quality now has improved a lot. This is also a very big point. In the past, we were using software which would be designed, yes, you might have a beta release just to test UX, but then it was done. This is instead is evolving, and it's evolving with you. That's why I really like the idea of a digital twin, because it's never going to be a finished product. It's something that is going to continue to evolve. And what you want is really that 70% type of element that you get. Now, what is interesting is also that if you work this way, you're not getting a lot of productivity at the beginning. For this average organization, which has never been really good at documenting stuff, this means adding a lot of work also to start finally getting a bit of work. Now, AI can actually help with the documentation as well, but again, you need to steer it and do it yourself.
So that also raises another interesting challenge, right?
Yes.
Because it takes a lot of efforts to get this off the ground. The returns, right, will be later on, hopefully, we don't know. But how do you even free up the capacity? You probably have to free up at least 20% of the team's capacity to work on this and run all these experiments. How do you do that?
Now, this is the other very interesting learning. And again, we learned around this through experimentation. This is not a technology where you want to get an off-the-shelf solution that does everything. And I'm becoming more and more careful of all the tools that already exist in our PCs, both office, but also in our private life, where now there is an AI button on top. Because the real added value is to have a general tool where you add your own context. Let's give an example. For sure, someone outside is developing an HR digital twin. And we know that also Claude, as creators and co-work, thinks that actually can do some basic HR tasks. But is there really an added value to buy something that is standard across different organizations? No, because the moment that I get that standard, I still need to do a huge effort to customize it to what I need. So it's probably better to start from scratch and identify internally those use cases, and there are many, where you can get either gains of individual productivity, so meaning at the individual level, or gains of team productivity. So the digital twin I mentioned is probably the largest initiative that we're running, but we have about 46 use cases at the moment in HR. Some are small, and some are already live and being used by the teams, automating responses to email messages on our HR operations team. This is already freeing up considerable amount of time. That element, that small chatbot that we released on performance management, we have estimated that that alone has saved us already 500 hours of work for our HR business partners. And that's exactly the point. I think it is really short-sighted, the idea that, oh, those 500 hours, let's cut one head and go ahead, because you need to actually reinvest for the bigger things that we actually need to do. And this is, by the way, where also a lot of companies are not getting it right. They're focusing only on the individual productivity part and they're wondering why this is not consolidating in real performance. And this is also the other key element that I think we need to manage. You need both to actually be able to really reap the benefits of the AI tools today.
It obviously creates a really interesting challenge because deploying this technology is a significant investment. You need policies, you need tokens.
Yes.
Right? You gotta dedicate a lot of time to stand it up. Not everything is gonna work out.
Yes.
And you still need the humans because you want the human judgment. Maybe you need less of them. If somebody's looking for a quick return, this is not it.
I don't think that there is a quick return. In many of the projects that I've seen, but this has been an old problem with any technology, there is this idea, oh, we're going to identify quick wins. If there is a quick win in an organization, there has been a mismanagement. Because if you have something under your eyes and you have never done it, there has been different issues. This goes back to work design. What AI does is the opportunity to do stuff really differently. But this is a longer-term gain that you're going to have. At the moment, you need to accept that you're going to have gains on your personal productivity, you're going to have gains on team productivity, and you're going to have some hiccups in terms of investment. What this means is also the fact that you need to get more and more people to use AI in an organization. And I think many organizations are shooting to get the big shot to actually get, and not having enough time to actually get a disciplined adoption by the team. And let's be careful. Organizations are often not doing this, but people are, because on your mobile phone, you probably are going to have the tool. And we are sometimes worried about the sensitivity of our data, but those are already out. Instead of investing time from the beginning on teaching and getting people to understand, guys, it's important that you don't put this type of information, whatever tool there is, etc., etc. It's again a systemic approach that we need to get around this. It's not another IT tool that I have installed on my system. And you know, one of the interesting aspects is these tools are growing into our company's ecosystem. You notice that what Copilot was when it was first released as a pilot to some companies and what it is becoming today, it's incredibly different. But this is also explaining what is the journey that each individual needs to do, their productivity and understanding. This also raises one last element. This is not anymore a technology where somebody at the C-suite level can decide, oh, let's implement it and task IT to actually do it and let's review it in a couple of months. If C-suite members are not using it, okay, if every leader in the organization does not start using it for their own personal productivity, et cetera, the gap of understanding for them versus what any person of their team is going to have is going to be widening. And this time, it's a lot more dangerous than in the past. Everybody of us has one of those stories about that manager that was still printing emails for a big portion of that career. We have been laughing around that, but somehow those were isolated elements, etc. I think that with AI, it's going to be a lot more disruptive. The fact that leaders are not showing the way, it's going to hinder the capacity of some organization to really make the difference.
I want to go back to something we talked about a little bit earlier. What I understood is that work design, you need IT, mm-hmm. you need HR, you need mm-hmm. operations, whoever owns processes, right? Mm-hmm. You need all these groups at the mm-hmm. table and work collaboratively in designing the system.
Yes.
But where's the line manager in this? We're talking about knowledge work. Drucker famously said, right, knowledge work needs to be designed by the knowledge worker themselves. How do you solve for that?
Well, this is also another interesting question. My take is that actually there are many organizations where work design is happening at the worker level already. That is already happening. And very often managers are the key enablers around that. This is true in a lot of self-management effort where there is less of a formality of a hierarchical element. The problem is that if we are in a formal organization, formal hierarchical bureaucracy organization, there is no incentive for doing work design activity. Of course, you're still going to have the smart manager. Of course, you're still going to have the enlightened one. They will understand what needs to be done. And by the way, this is exactly what I was tracing before. Agile experimentation projects. We have had a lot of this stuff. The fact that people have more than one role at the same time, we already had that. Okay. And also, again, the work from home type of element has already accelerated part of that. But it's not getting at the level that it's institutional. And you're completely right on citing the manager. Because actually, middle managers are the ones that are going to be more affected around this AI implementation element. And these are the ones that actually can, by taking awareness of what is happening to their job, be probably the promoter of something a lot stronger in terms of work design. Actually, recently I had a quick exchange with a couple of colleagues where we said, well, probably it's going to be really the revolt of middle manager at a certain point, but not to save their job. Because it's not just that, because these people are the ones that are actually going to understand that portions of what they do today cannot be redistributed. If you go down to some of the use cases of companies that have implemented, and IBM in our domain is probably one of the that has been more widely advertised, what happened? They cut a lot of middle management roles. But 1 year after, they started putting them back in because they realized that that entire job could not go away. You still needed coordination. You still needed to have the motivation of people. You still needed a lot of activities, which, again, because we don't know work design, we never really looked at them. We think that managers don't have managerial skills sometimes and we enroll them to a leadership course. But did we really look at what their work is? What they do in terms of coordination work and those activities. Again, we come back to the example before. Nobody knows how decisions are taken in organization, or very few people do. I think we need to onboard managers sooner rather than later into this journey, which is also why I was referring before on this fact that you really need a leading by example type of element, getting all managers to practice. Because I think that what is theoretically a very interesting element when we talk about agentic organization, this idea that a manager is managing both human and AI agents. I don't know if this is going to be really the future, but it is an interesting aspect. And that is also an element that implies work design. Because if I need to do a performance management of an AI tool, I implicitly have designed what the work they are actually doing it. That's also an interesting challenge within this.
I hope that you're right, and I hope that companies actually invest in this, because it strikes me as that we're not doing that, right? We're putting people that have great technical skills into a leadership role. They don't know the first thing about setting objectives, motivating people. And now on top of that, we also ask them to redesign how the work gets done. And 98.999% have virtually never had any training whatsoever in this. So I think as an organization, to be successful, I think you gotta have like a common foundation, a common language, a common way of doing that, and hopefully something that's not just mechanical, what's the task that to be done, but also understand the human element of this. Okay, so we talked about the manager. What about the employees? Because one dilemma I can see is you read all these LinkedIn posts that in the future we're gonna have these fully autonomous organizations, the robots run everything. Employees probably have a hard time seeing themselves in that future. And I don't think leaders necessarily do themselves a favor by advertising this vision. And we're going to need people to help us build whatever the future is going to look like. So even if we don't, maybe don't need them, or not as many of them in the end, we're still going to need them to get at least close to that point. So how do you solve for that? Because nobody's sawing up the branch of the tree that they're sitting on. How do you do that in the real world?
It's a very interesting take, and I think that there are three elements to consider here. And these are elements that get very often mixed also in a lot of the intervention. Let me start with the big macroeconomic element. As I mentioned, there is a little bit of this AI washing trends. There are companies that are cutting jobs, et cetera, et cetera. On the other side, what you mentioned before, 2 billion people losing their job, is starting to get a lot of attention from a political point of view. Can we really afford collectively on the planet to lose 2 billion jobs? No, we can't. Recently, in the exchange with another FMCG company that I was speaking with, they said, look, we could automate another 20% of our workforce, not with AI, with technology that we own, but somebody needs to buy our products. And I think this is an element that we need to work on. If you look at the P&L of most of the companies, they have never been healthier. The profits are more and more healthier from. So the question is also how investment markets are requesting results that is driving a lot of this is not implicitly an economic need. Then we go to the organizational layer, which is, of course, how you actually take decision. I do think that individual organization will exploit AI also to do some organizational rearrangement. If you take work design now, just as an example, and you implement it, you're going to find a lot of areas where we have jobs but no work. So at an organizational level, this is something that actually needs to be done. We've been debating for the past 20 years about sustainability, ESG, etc., etc. And my point here is not just firing everybody, but thinking about long term what we can invest into. On the individual layer, I totally get the point. People are scared. What we need to avoid is a type of a Ludist type of reaction, which is let's destroy the machine, because that is not going to work. And I think that what we need to create, individual, organizational, and macroeconomic level, is exactly the journey. Because what we know is that every revolution from a technology point of view has changed the way work is done, has not cancelled work. It has cancelled jobs, but not the work. Jobs have been recreated somewhere else. We sometimes don't really understand job creation and job design and work design from that point of view. And we need to work on that at the individual, at the organization, and at the macroeconomic level. There's not an easy answer because, again, we don't know the direction. If you just go back at the beginning of the years of the web revolution, so many new jobs that were created, then companies got busted. It's a cycle that is going to be repeating itself. We don't have to be just scared, but we need to take into consideration, of course, this acceleration of these AI tools, it's probably going to have an impact. But as we mentioned before, long term, we still need time to get the entire infrastructure of this new technology around.
So one thing I have thought a lot about more recently is that I think when we talk about operating model, right, how organizations function, there seems to be really a gap at the middle. So we're really good at kind of driving things up to the C-suite and driving things down. But what we're not really good at is driving change across the organization. That's a big, right, issue of work design, right? I mean, we're still mostly functionally organized, right? But the processes, the value streams, they cut across. So there's only really so much we can do within each of our silos. You can obviously make HR more productive and, right, have a digital twin to answer questions, but it doesn't fundamentally change the value proposition that the HR function provides. Do you see that as a gap? I mean, what's the answer to that? Because right, again, we talked about it can't be driven top down. So how does that happen?
Look, it's very, very interesting what you're mentioning, and change management is one of the disciplines that I had intimately a passion in the past. It is probably evidence that we don't understand work and how it is done. And I just give you an example. Typical change management process. What do we do in an organization? We have a big change, we change process. Let's say we implement a new ERP tool. What do? We identify change agents and we identify a parallel network to the standard management to actually cater the change. So what are the managers supposed to be doing? They're already doing something else. What? Because what you get is somebody that is telling you you should be changing, and the person that actually is owning your performance or whatever you have in your own hierarchical organization that is not involved into that. This is the single point of failure, because end up not knowing how a manager can drive change, so we create a separate organization to do that. I mentioned it before. It's decisions, it's how you drive motivation, it's how you drive commitment, it's how you plan and design the work of your team. These are all skills that our managers should be having. The only problem is we package some of these in leadership training that are not addressing also that element anymore, because we don't yet understand that. You know, the most interesting aspect about really learning change management is when you those big crisis type of management courses. But normally you're already sitting in a C-suite job. Why am I mentioning one of those examples? Because those are examples where you need to have a procedure for stuff to be done. And by the way, it's not that we have never had tools around this. Over time, I got a little bit fascinated on the fact of how pilots work on airplanes. And it's interesting because we have done a lot of procedural work, not just how they need to run the engines, how they need to run the machine, but how they take decision, how they communicate among themselves. There is a checklist for everything. From a technology point of view, we solve most of it. Most of the accidents in the last 10 years have happened because either, unfortunately, in certain cases, one of the pilots took the decision, or because of miscommunication, or everything that we in HR like calling it the human factor. But that can be decomposed also in work element. That can be planned. And this is a perfect example of something that has been done. It's not that we don't have any of these tools. They're probably not widely available, and we need to make them a little bit more like generally agreed accounting principle. We need some generally agreed work principle that we can really refer to so that we can really plan from an organization perspective and really start doing this in organization. Change management is something that everybody in an organization should be doing. And I totally get that. And that's why IT is back. For me, in AI, the only way of doing it is if everybody starts using this type of tools, because that's the only way of understanding it, because this is going to cut the adoption loop. And if people are going to be then enabled to do their task revision, work design, et cetera, it becomes also a collective experiment around that. Now, is it possible that every organization is starting to do that all at once at the same time? No. But this is where experiment pilot actually helps, and we have a history around showing how this is good. It's just that then once the virus, the positive virus is there, we need to let it run and we need to get the organization to really then reap the benefits of this.
I agree with you, although I've also gotten a little disillusioned with change management, because I think in many cases it's just a feeble attempt to sell people on a decision that has been made a long time ago. I think ERP implementation, we decided to do with SAP. And so this is what that means for you. And this is going to be great for you, although maybe it isn't. And I think the second problem is that kind of change management top-down approach is that oftentimes the design is just not very good. If I would get a dollar for every time I heard a story about an ERP implementation that I'd either got canceled or postponed, or just ended up in like another 9 months of suffering to work through the punch list of stuff that didn't get done, I'd have quite a few dollars, right? And with this AI topic, I think it's even worse, because we can't figure out what the landing zone is. So it's really an emergent property. And so we can't drive that top down. So this whole idea of deciding what the message is and who gets it and what town hall we deliver it in, I think that's all over, right? I think it's probably more about orchestrating and coordinating these changes so that these trains don't run into each other, because they're all running on the same track.
Totally agree. There is an advantage point here. Most of these AI tools are good at helping you with the design. This is the big element that in the past we didn't have. And this is an element that if you use properly, you only need to give this initial inputs and a little bit of a set rules, then this tool can actually help you. Now, this is exactly the right element of definition. What is the minimum level of governance and instruction that you need to give? And what is it instead something that you can give yourself? And that's, I think, from a self-management perspective and self-realization and awareness point of view, I think it's going to also make the difference in the positive adoption of this.
Yeah. The cynic in me also has like in mind, there's probably a CEO somewhere that sits in front of ChatGPT and types in, how do I get to 20% EBITDA? And ChatGPT subserviently delivers the answer to that and asks, would you like me to turn that into an implementation plan? And would you like me to send off the layoff notices? So as a CEO, you could say, gee, 5 minutes on ChatGPT, right? And I can go back to the golf course, but being not so cynical about it. So if a CEO listens to this, and agrees with every word that we talked about, calls you tomorrow and says, hey, Sergio, help me. Here's 90 days. Here's a budget. I give you air cover to do whatever you have to do. What do you do? How do you help the organization go forward? What are like the 1, 2, 3 things that people should think about?
I think that what I would suggest to a CEO is to run an activity level audit of the 2 or 3, probably better 3, most important value chains that they have within the company before they make any AI investment decision. This is not a skill assessment, it's not a technology assessment, it's not a process assessment, it's not an acquisition M&A. It's look really at what activities are producing value, who is doing them, what decisions are embedded around them, and which of these can be candidate for redesign, and which of these are then collectively really candidate for automation or AI augmentation at that point. Because every other action that we might be suggesting in a similar element, hiring new people, restructuring, naming a chief transformation officer, etc., etc., they all depend on understanding the work that is being done. Most CEOs will probably have their strategy deck that they need to reach. They have an org chart, but neither of these is telling them how work gets done. Now, this part can actually be done in 30 days. It doesn't take a lot of time if you think about it. But there is a hidden spot here. You need to find the two, three most important value chains internally. And this is where a lot of debate is going to be needed about what our internal value chain, because we don't understand them. That's where you will discover that the way our silos are built, they don't necessarily create value in that organization. And this will require an unbundling and rebundling of work, which is giving you already a bigger scale of the transformation that is needed. And this will open immediately the question of governance, because you immediately will realize that this is not a task that you can give to HR or to IT alone, etc., because they need to own it. So, first 30 days, you can actually do this as a pilot, and the other 60, you're going to battle or design your governance model exactly, which is exactly the architecture that you actually need to do work design. It's not going to be easy. And again, I singled out that element of the value chain, internal value chain, because this is the piece that I'm interested in operating model design. I still find so much effort in understanding how do we create value. I mean, a salesperson normally knows how to answer that. Not necessarily always correct, but ask to any finance person, HR person, supply chain person in an organization, they don't really have an understanding. By the way, this means that they don't understand the value of the work that they're doing, okay? And ultimately, that's the most important signal on the fact that you don't even have the tools to actually understand what you're doing and the value that you're creating. And I think this would be the quickest, probably takes even less than 90 days to really understand that you're missing an important skill in your organization.
I couldn't agree more. I think every time, right, you do this cross-functional operating model analysis, you map out the workflow, and people are just shocked. And I'm oftentimes surprised, because if you look at kind of how many pain points and failures and breakdowns there are, how many handoffs there are, I think it's magic that organizations still deliver a product, a service, a solution. Right? And sometimes even more than once. A friend of mine once said, how long would it take for your organization to collapse if everybody just did exactly what the job description tells them to do? Would it be, right, minutes, days, weeks, or months? And I think most organizations would probably be maybe weeks at the point, right, the cash would stop coming in. So I always find it very interesting when you have these big transformation projects and it's all logically laid out and everything is neatly put into nice little boxes. But we kind of forget that there's this human glue that holds it together. And if we
Perfect.
take that out, we'll just have a bunch of pieces.
Absolutely. The problem is exactly this. We rely on human ingenuity at this element too much to uncover things that our organization design is not doing, which is why there has always been this parallel organization to whatever you put in the org chart. And my point is that now you have a technology AI which is going to show this immediately and put it in the face of everybody in the organization. And that's why we need to use this accelerator positively. Coming back a little bit to the question around middle manager. Now, a lot of middle manager will have a tool in which they can demonstrate very easily that their boss is not adding value. How do you put that in perspective in a company?
Yeah, that's going to be also an interesting conversation. What a treat to have you back on the show. I really enjoyed this conversation. My pleasure. So I'll put a link to your Substack and your
Thank
LinkedIn
you.
information into the show notes. But again, thank you so much for coming on the show, and good luck with your AI initiative.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Thomas.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time, let's make work matter.